This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects us all, but few of us understand. Presented in a format that you can consume in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. But first, a word from our sponsor. Safety National's insurance program protects large organizations against network security and privacy risks. It reimburses damages and financial loss arising from accidental or malicious incidents to computer networks, software, and data. Coverage options address various risks ranging from liability, business interruption, reputational harm, penalties, and more. Visit safetynational.com for additional details. I've been at the RSA conference in San Francisco this week, arguably the most significant security conference in the world. It's my third year going, and I'm getting a handle on... I've been at the RSA conference in San Francisco this week, arguably the most significant security technology conference in the world. It's my third year going, and I think I'm getting a handle on it as far as balancing briefing meetings with companies, finding interesting sessions to attend, and poking around the Moscone Conference Center for information about what's coming. There'll be a longer article next week at Cyber Protection Magazine about the event and what I found, but last year, I had a chance to interview Rohit Ghai, the CEO of the host company, RSA. And it was one of the best, if not the best, interview I ever did. So I requested another sit-down again this year, and RSA enthusiastically agreed. Now, while last year was a bit confrontational, in a very friendly manner, this year we concentrated on where the industry is now compared to the predictions he made last year. And then we moved on to trends facing the industry. I think you'll learn a bit about where we stand in the world of digital security, and yes, we agreed to do it again next year. We did this interview on the show floor at the RSA booth, so there's a lot of background noise, but my microphones did a yeoman job and got our voices out loud and clear, so I don't think you'll have any problem listening to it, and I hope you enjoy it.
Here we go. Okay, so we are here today with Rohit Ghai, CEO of RSA, who we interviewed last year for our podcast, and it turned out to be the second most popular podcast we've done in the entire year, second only to Bruce Schneier when he was giving his rant about cryptocurrency and blockchain. But he was much more positive this week. I like what he had to say about AI making government more accessible and understandable. So the keynotes this year have been outstanding.
Indeed, they always are thought-provoking for sure, and glad to hear you use the adjective outstanding, Luke. So that's great.
So I want to go back and review a couple of things from last year, because you made some predictions. And specifically, you talked about the need for consolidation. And I've heard that over and over here, but it seems like as more things get consolidated, we have more players. I think Richard Steinen said that the cybersecurity industry is up to 5,000 companies now. Not a whole lot of consolidation going on. So where are we with that?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Look, you know, the creation of new companies and startups does continue. Look, the market is not consolidating at large. There isn't the emergence of one gigantic monolithic cybersecurity platform. That's not happening. What is happening is there is consolidation in individual, what I call pillars of cybersecurity.
Right.
And so as an example, you know, on the identity side of things, there is an identity security platform that the market is consolidating toward. In the security operations area, you know, the XDR SIM space is consolidating. Similarly, for the vulnerability and patch management and, you know, the kind of the secure coding area. So there is a few centers of gravity that that are attracting this consolidation activity in the market. And I think that trend does continue. My belief is that the cyber threat actors actually exploit the gaps between these siloed solutions that leads to vulnerability and that compromises the cause of security. And as such, consolidation, as long as it's in within these pillars and makes logical sense, it's actually a very good thing for the market. And I've seen positive trends in that area. There is, of course, like you noted, new startups coming up, and that's fine. That always is good to kind of drive the innovation vector forward. But headline summary, consolidation has happened, and it is a good trend for the cybersecurity industry.
Okay. The other trend you were all excited about, and you actually did your entire keynote having a conversation with an AI, you were fully on board with Generate AI, and we had some dissent about that between the two of us. But do you still feel as optimistic about it, or has the hype gone a bit thin?
I am still an AI optimist. The one change in my mental model is the following. Earlier I was thinking about a two-step model where, you know, to use the pilot analogy, we talked about a co-pilot model where AI will sit alongside a human and they together will fly the plane, eventually going towards an autopilot model where AI itself is going to fly the plane. And maybe the human in that story is doing a different job, right? They're the flight plan designer, or they are the kind of the supervisor, but they're no longer in the cockpit, right? It was a two-step model. But the mental model has evolved in my head. I realized that we've been missing a step in the story.
Okay. I hope it's the same step I've been noticing.
Okay. Let's see if our thoughts have aligned in that area. The one step that I think we've been missing is that AI is going to have a very profound role in terms of creating just a more user-friendly cockpit.
Okay.
It's not a co-pilot model at all.
Yeah.
It's still the human entering the cockpit, but in the past we have needed very trained pilots.
Right.
Pilots that have trained for thousands of hours of flying time before they can fly the plane.
Right.
And as you know, cybersecurity is an industry with negative unemployment, where we just don't have enough talent in the market to serve the needs of cybersecurity because it's a very specialized skill. I believe what AI can do is it can create a cockpit that is more user-friendly, has more friendlier gauges. So if a mere mortal like myself walks into the cockpit, instead of getting overwhelmed with all the gauges and buttons and things that I need to manipulate, it's a much more user-friendly interaction model. So before we go to co-pilot, AI, I think, will democratize the cockpit and make it easier for the human in the cockpit and a more mere mortal who hasn't had thousands of hours of training flying a plane to actually fly the plane. And that's that I think is going to be a very important and often ignored benefit of AI, because most people are getting drunk on AI and they're leaping to sort of the steps two and three before thinking about step one.
Yeah. Kind of riffing off of that, one of the things that Secretary Blinken said yesterday,
yep,
was that how governments have to get more involved in the process, not only of regulating, but training people.
Yeah.
I was encouraged when he said that they've now got a digital officer in every embassy in the world, which is a big step forward, I think. But I was listening to another CEO that was saying it's impossible for the government to compete with the private sector. And then but if we're relying on the private sector to train these people, we're also relying on them to support the profit model. That, to me, means that the government's actually the responsibility for training the new people up so they can go into the private sector.
Yeah,
at the same time,
I
understand that there's a social responsibility to what we're doing. Are you looking forward to the government getting more involved that way?
I think the government as well as cybersecurity vendors have an important role to play. If you think about the market at large, right, there is the public sector and government organizations, and there is the private sector.
Right.
On the private sector, there are the cybersecurity players and there are the non-cybersecurity players. Okay?
Right.
I think the government and the cybersecurity vendors have this burden of thinking security first.
Right.
Everywhere else, like you noted, there's the profit, there's the motivation of profit, and therefore every other company is going to put innovation ahead of security, and they will think about the skills that they need. They will not necessarily think long term. They will not think about kind of the overall market at large. They will think about their own profit motive, whereas the government is mission driven. They have the burden of ensuring the safety of citizens in an increasingly cyber-physical world, so they cannot ignore cyber, and therefore they will need to play a role in cyber talent. And I think the public sector organizations and governments have stepped up. Actually, I'm very encouraged with, as an example, with the NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0 document. So the think tanks within the government, governmental agencies like CISA, are coming up with very good informational artifacts that can help educate and improve the talent situation in the industry, because these are very thoughtfully articulated documents that I think hit at the core of the problem. So I am encouraged, and I do believe in the role of the government in terms of advancing the knowledge base within cyber as well as the talent base within cyber. But I think the cybersecurity players like RSA also have a very important role to help that cause. Because at the end of the day, if we create technology which cannot be operated properly because there isn't enough talent to operate it with the right level of rigor, then we haven't accomplished anything, right? We haven't moved the needle on cybersecurity. So I think government and cybersecurity vendors have that joint responsibility.
Okay, so that catches us up from last year. I got one that you may not like for this year.
Okay.
We had two stories last week. One was a survey that was done by company called Apricorn,
okay,
where they had surveyed, I think it was 1,000 CISOs,
okay,
and they found out that the level of encryption for devices in organizations has dropped close to 80% between 2022 and 2023.
Wow.
Which, when I read that, I said, what the hell happened? And then came out the news about Marriott.
The Marriott cyber incident, yeah.
2018.
Yeah.
Where they swore up and down that their network was encrypted with 128-bit encryption. And last week they admitted, no, we weren't. They were encrypted, and I'm using quote marks here, with SHA-2. Which had been obsoleted 8 years previous to 2018. So when you use the concept that you should never attribute to malice what's better explained by ignorance, I'm wondering if that is the reason why that survey showed a drop in encryption, and that people are suddenly understanding what encryption actually is, and they don't have it.
Yeah.
Now, as someone who runs the company, which is essentially built on the encryption that we're all supposed to be using, does that concern you?
It absolutely does. I think, look, be it the area of encryption, be it the area of identity management, multi-factor authentication, be it the area of vulnerability management. I just think that the industry has always operated with this technical bent, where we've always been enamored with the next shiny toy,
right.
AI being one example of that, and we always swing to the extreme. We are not paying enough attention to the hygiene, table stakes type controls, like encryption, like multi-factor authentication, to the detriment of our cybersecurity posture. And I think that's the root cause of why, you know, people are checking the box, if you will, and getting away with as less cyber hygiene, while the data stares us in the face that if you're not encrypting properly, your crown jewels, your data is ripe for the taking. Ransomware, you know, is a possibility in your account. If you're not running multi-factor authentication, 30% of all breaches at all time have been on the back of stolen credentials. 87% of breaches have been on the back of privilege escalation, everything to do with identity. And yet, you know, more than half of organizations around the world don't even have MFA. They're still using passwords, right? So this tendency to always get drunk on the, you know, the latest shiny technology while ignoring basic table stakes cyber hygiene measures is what is causing this. Now, having said that, back to the topic of encryption, Lou, there are a couple of positive trends that I think shine the light on the problem of encryption. One of them goes back to the role of the public sector, the regulator, and the regulator, as an example, is now the federal government of the United States, as an example, is demanding FIPS 140-3 compliance now, which is a more rigorous and more advanced encryption algorithm than the 140-2. So a lot of organizations, in order to serve the federal vertical, are upping their game on encryption, and it's driving a lot of encryption conversations in the industry. So that's one area. The second thing that is driving encryption conversations in the industry is post-quantum cryptography. Okay. And the fear that once quantum computers come about, that, you know, the data that has been harvested along the way will be decrypted, and, you know, all sorts of data privacy concerns, all sorts of data-related concerns will suddenly need to be dealt with. So post-quantum and FIPS 140-3 are driving encryption conversations, which should help matters in terms of drawing attention to this important hygiene matter in the industry.
Okay. So what is RSA doing in the area of post-quantum encryption?
Because
I hear from everybody else, but I never hear from you guys.
Yeah.
Which tells me you're keeping things under wraps.
The reason you don't hear from us in that area, Lou, is that RSA now is no longer directly in the encryption business. We use encryption as one of the enabling technologies for our identity business, but we're no longer offering an encryption product in the market.
Okay.
And hence we are not directly involved in the post-quantum conversation. But we still track it because we are actually one of the consumers of encryption as opposed to the creators of encryption technology. The good news or the bad news relative to post-quantum cryptography is that every year that I come to the conference here, it's about 10 years away. Having said that...
I think we had that conversation last year.
Yeah, every year it's 10 years away. Having said that, I think one of these years we might be surprised, and suddenly there'll be some kind of, you know, a quantum jump, no pun intended, that'll trigger, like suddenly it'll be like looming right in front of us, and we'll need to react very quickly. So I do think it behooves the industry to make sure attention is paid to the very important problem of post-quantum cryptography, and we don't lose focus on it just because it's a little far away. Because the bad actors for sure are harvesting data now in order to decrypt it in the future when quantum computers become a reality.
And do you think the reason that there are so many breaches is because people really haven't adopted just basic encryption going forward?
I will broaden that concept. And not basic encryption, but basic hygiene.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I say, you know, the line I've been using off late is people think good AI will save us all in the world of cybersecurity, and I say that is not true.
No.
You need good AI, but also good hygiene.
Yeah.
And those two together can be a good recipe.
I have noticed a trend in the companies I've been talking with, and there are 500 companies here, so I haven't been able to talk to all of them. But there seems to be a trend toward the issue of email and messaging security, which has been, I think, really ignored in the past few years in exchange for crypto and blockchain and AI. But do you think we're still going to move to the point where we're really, like, I mean, email is such a basic technology. Everybody uses it.
My wife uses it.
Yeah. My grandchildren use it.
Really?
And they don't use it very well. I mean, I'm always beating on my wife. Say, oh, look at this email I got. I think I'm going to buy this. I said, no, you're not.
No, 100%. And I would put that in the category of, like, basic stuff that, you know, again, you know, the whole phishing using emails, etc., is a big big proportion of the way how the bad actors, threat actors get in, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the recent Verizon data breach investigation report says about a third of the, you know, third of the cyber breaches happen on the back of stolen credentials. About a third happened on the back of phishing, and email was a big vector from a phishing perspective.
Okay. So what are we going to expect from RSA on identity security? And I've kind of been dinging your marketing on this, because lots of companies here say, wait, there's somebody walking around with a sign that says, SOAR is dead. And I mentioned that to somebody who's not, who's using SOAR, and they said, that's because they don't know how to use it. And now, you were saying that identity access management is dead, and now we've got to work with identity security. What's the difference?
The difference is the following. We think about identity and MFA. I'm very grateful to all the organizations that have, you know, public sector regulators that have mandated MFA. But it's not going to be enough. Because if you think about identity, stolen credentials, we talk about 30% of breaches of all time have happened on the back of stolen credentials.
Right.
Credentials do not get stolen at the point of authentication or access loop. They get stolen somewhere else along the way.
Yeah.
They get stolen during the life cycle of an identity. So as much as we have obsessed about that point when I actually access or authenticate myself, we need to have that same level of obsession and deliberate focus throughout an identity's life cycle.
Yeah.
And therein lies the need for an identity security platform. It's not just multi-factor authentication, it's managing and assuring identity throughout its life cycle.
Yeah. I have a friend I was talking to a few months ago who got a notification from Amazon that her login credentials had been picked up in a heist, and she was really pissed off at Amazon for this. And I said, listen, do you use the same password for everything? And she said, yeah. Said, well, okay, it wasn't Amazon's fault. If you use the same password everywhere, that means anybody could have picked it up, and that means they can go after every account you have.
Every account you have, exactly.
And she hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah.
So I walked you through the process of changing that. But I also take the process is that I change my passwords every month.
Yeah.
Of everything.
Yeah, and that requires discipline, and that requires So I'm glad you bring up the notion of passwords. There is a lot of buzz in the identity security industry around passwordless.
Yeah.
The world, world beyond passwords.
Yeah.
And I think that will be a better world from a cost, complexity, security perspective. There is a lot of use cases for passwordless in the consumer identity world. And the big hyperscalers, Google, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, all these guys have announced support for passwordless in their devices, in their endpoints. And that's great for the consumer passwordless use cases. We also need to get rid of passwords in the enterprise. And there is a protocol called FIDO, which is the standards-based. And RSA has been on the board of FIDO, what is called the FIDO Alliance. We've been contributing our expertise and thought process to get FIDO ready, not just for consumer use cases, but for the enterprise. And we actually announced a set of innovations at the conference this week around secure passwordless that is ready for the workforce identity use cases.
Okay.
And I think there is a market awareness need in terms of, hey, not all passwordless is created equal. You need secure passwordless, not just any passwordless, because if you substitute passwords with pass keys and they can still be stolen, you haven't achieved anything.
Yeah.
So, again, the point I'm making is password enterprise, secure, passwordless is something that RSA has been focused on. And the work, we're very happy with the progress that the FIDO Alliance has made over the last decade to actually advance that technology. And that will address the problem that you were talking about, where, you know, the regular mere mortal human being is not going to be as disciplined to update your passwords or remember it or like that.
Well, it's a pain in the ass.
It's a pain in the ass, absolutely.
And whenever somebody offers me a passkey, I'm going, okay, I'll go with that. Okay, I'll go with authentication. But in that in itself is becoming a bit of a problem. My son works for the Academy of Sciences, for the Asian Art Museum, and for Dolby. Okay? And he's got to use authentication to get into his email and all of them. Well, recently he bought himself a new phone. And he is so pissed off because they're all using a different authentication tool.
Yes.
One of them happens to be Microsoft, which we all hate. Even though I know they're here, I know they're a big contributor, but it is kind of a pain in the ass. Do you think we're going to get to the point where there's going to be any standardization in this?
Yes, 100%. And you hit the nail on the head.
Is it 10 years off or is it soon?
No. It's not a decade away. I think it's sooner. It's, you know, there's good alignment in the industry around the need for standardization, especially in the identity world, because, you know, every human being needs to interact with this problem of identifying themselves as you access any technology. So it's that area is in dire need of standardization, so we're not exposing the complexity of technology to the regular user, because if they find it too complex, they're just going to use the same password or they're going to either bypass that process. So we need to remove the friction by standardization, and FIDO is one such example. RSA, for decades, we were very proprietary. We took pride in our proprietariness.
Yeah.
But at this point, we support every possible standard in the identity world, be it OIDC, SAML, SCIM. You know, there's a 3 or 4-letter acronym soup of standards in identity that we now comply with. Why? Because, yes, the world will move towards platforms, but until it does, we'll need to integrate with other technologies that sits alongside us with a standards-based integration model. So it is very critical to support the standardization capability in order to reduce the friction for the end user.
Excellent. Okay.
And that's it for this week on Crucial Tech. I hope you enjoyed the information. As much as I enjoyed talking with Rohit again. If you have any questions or concerns, contact us at cyberprotectionmagazine.com and we will get back to you as soon as we possibly can. In the meantime, stay safe out there, folks. This has been Lou Covey with Crucial Tech, a Footwasher Media production.